You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. Brought to you in association with Fitzdares, the world's finest bookmaker, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary. To celebrate the launch of Nick Luck Daily, Fitzdares have a special sign-up offer that will double your winnings on your first bet up to a £50 stake. Just go to www.fitzdares.com/luck to sign up. Hi, welcome to Nick Luck Daily, a brand new show bringing you the latest news and sharpest insight from around the racing world. We will be with you from mid-morning every weekday. It is Monday, July the 13th, and that was the weekend that gave us the feel-good factor that we'd craved one week earlier. Oxted's win in the July Cup at Newmarket was a first Group 1 for popular trainer Roger Teal, whose post-race celebrations seemed to fill an entire empty racecourse. Kieran Fallon, that's Kieran with a C, became the first apprentice in recent memory to win an elite-level race in the UK. And later I'll be talking to Fallon Sr. to find out what it meant to him. As one star emerges, another takes his final bow as Barry Geraghty, one of the totemic figures among jump jockeys, called time on his richly decorated career on Saturday night. His great friend and mentor, Nicky Henderson, offers his thoughts in a few minutes. And Pinatubo, well, he might not have taken your breath away, but he was back in the Group 1 groove in the Prix Jean Prat at Deauville yesterday. His trainer, Charlie Appleby, will be along shortly, but first I'm joined by David Yates from the Daily Mirror. David, who is Pinatubo now?
Pinatubo is still a champion two-year-old, my liege, but as we suspected, he's just not the dominant force at three as he was at two. That was a workmanlike victory yesterday, I thought, in the Jean Prat. The first two finished clear. It's perhaps unfair to denigrate it. He ran perfectly honest and laudable races when making the podium in the 2000 Guineas and the St. James's Palace Stakes. And it sort of became a little bit of a... There was some stuff on social media about the doubters and all this stuff. I don't consider myself necessarily a doubter. My opinion before the race was that this horse wasn't going to dominate at three like he did at two, but that he might pick up a Group 1 race. We said a few weeks ago, I think, that Pinatubo was this season too darn hot. And I think that still stands up, that opinion. So I was pleased to see him get his head in front. And it's interesting to see what they're going to do with Pinatubo now. But I still don't think that this is going to be necessarily a springboard to a load of Group 1s. I think that the 7 furlong Group 1s, the Foray and the Jean Prat, are probably the weakest of the season in that category.
Well, this is what Pinatubo's trainer, Charlie Appleby, had to say. He spoke to me earlier on this morning.
Delighted for him to get back on track and with a Group 1 back under his belt. It was a little bit of a rough race there, but he got the... He showed his old attributes there, and like William said, you know, after he'd gone three and a half, as long as he's still sat last, and next thing he knows, he says he's hitting the front. His acceleration is immense, and he saw it out well, as we were confident he would do over back to the 7. I think now, we'll let the dust settle and as we always say, regroup. But the horse deserves a bit of a rest. After talking to His Highness Sheikh Mohammed, we said we'll just let things settle down for the next week. But it's very unlikely that we'd probably look towards the Sussex, and whether we go down the route of the Foray or look at the Moulin. Those will be decisions that we make a bit later on.
The Foray is over 7 furlongs, the Moulin's over a mile. Did yesterday, a race over 7 furlongs, make you think any differently about what he wants?
Nick, I think if we got the flat mile, I'm still confident he can see that out. As we know, in the Guineas, it was end to end. It was the quickest Guineas that's been ran. They got racing from a long way out. And I think it took its toll on the second and the third horse there, and teed it up, nicely for the winner. Take nothing away from them, all the class horses. But we did get racing from a long way out, and in the St. James's Palace, it's a slightly stiffer mile there, and they've gone a sensible gallop as well. And again, you know, we've just been outstayed on the day by a class horse, and you know, dropping back to the seven there yesterday, we were always confident that he'd take a bit of beating. But yeah, of course, everyone was going to say, well, it's seven's his trip, but I still believe with an easy mile or a flat mile, we'd be still, you know, very, very competitive.
So is there a race, a big race, somewhere in the world that you're really now looking toward with him toward the end of the season?
I think you're trying to ask me to say, is it the Breeders' Cup mile, which, of course, is on everybody's lips. For sure, it's a two-turn mile. You know, the only concerns you'd have is, you know, sometimes that time of year, the ground can get quite a bit more testing. But to be fair, he's won on soft ground there, as we saw in the Dewhurst. I wouldn't, it's not his ideal surface, but he's a class horse, he can get through it. So, you know, a race that we'd probably hopefully be looking towards working back from will be a Breeders' Cup mile.
And just with the travel arrangements this year, are you pretty confident you'd be able to get a team to the Breeders' Cup?
Well, no one's too confident at this present moment in time, but you know, hopefully as the weeks and the months roll on, you know, everything will start to stabilise a bit, and everyone will get some confidence, and we'll be allowed to start travelling again internationally. Obviously, as you know, we went to France this weekend for the first time ourselves, and it was nice to get there, and like I say, there was a racing crowd there, which was nice. It was good feel about it. And so hopefully, yeah, going further afield, then looking towards America and hopefully in Australia as well. We won't really get any of those, I think, indications, and probably until well into August, I'd imagine.
Charlie, thanks so much for chatting to me.
Pleasure. Thanks ever so much, Nick.
So Charlie Appleby reiterating what he told Scott Burton from the Racing Post yesterday, that the Sussex Stakes would not be on the agenda for Pinatubo, but also suggesting the Breeders' Cup mile would be his primary target. Dave, with Mahatha, Siskin, Circus Maximus, all Sussex Stakes bound, it doesn't take a genius to work out why Charlie Appleby might want to give the horse a break right now.
Exactly. There are two strands to this, aren't there, Nick? The first is that, well, we feel that Pinatubo has been outstayed by stronger milers in the closing stages at Newmarket and Ascot, but also those horses, those good horses, particularly the three that you've just mentioned.
And Palace Pier, of course, potentially.
Yeah, they are going to the Sussex. And so, yes, we fear they are stronger stayers and we don't want to run Pinatubo against those, but also they are better horses. And I think running against the likes of Circus Maximus, Siskin, and Mahatha would be the equivalent of banging your head against a brick wall. The two-turn mile at Keeneland is perfectly understandable. I would have thought if they can fit the foray in, they will, but they'll avoid the best milers at a mile.
One man who used to be able to ride a two-turn mile in the United States better than just about any European jockey was Kieran Fallon. He was fantastic round there in his pomp. And how proud he must have been on Saturday afternoon to watch his son, Kieran Jr., take his first Group 1. And Dave, the first Group 1 win for an apprentice rider, a claiming apprentice rider in the UK that any of us can remember. Please write in and tell me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, I'm afraid I won't be writing in there. I can't think of one. Yeah, this was a result that just, you know, I think prior to the Derby, and again, I don't want to denigrate the achievements of Aidan O'Brien and Coolmore, because to do that would be ridiculous. But I was saying before the Derby, it would be great to have a new name on the Cup. Well, this was the sort of result. Marcus Armitage of the Telegraph napped Oxted. So understandably, he was cheering through the final furlong as we were all watching the race on the steps of the grandstand. But the funny thing was, everybody else was as well. I'd napped Golden Horde, the beaten favourite. Surprise, surprise, comes the cry from the cheap seats. But we were all cheering Oxted winning, because obviously Roger Teal, Kieran Fallon's junior and senior. It was a really warming but over a very interesting result, I thought, you know, to talk to the trainer afterwards, and both jockeys, both the retired six-time champion and the rising star. Very interesting race, and exactly what Midsummer needed.
Life is always more interesting when there's a Fallon around, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I used to think when Kieran with a K was riding, you know, I'll shed tears the day you retire, because you just make this sport much more interesting, sometimes, usually for better, sometimes for worse. But he was always a great character to have around, and it was fascinating to get his insight on the progress that that Junior has made. Because as you would expect with Kieran, I've always thought, Kieran with a K, I always thought he would, I'd like to play poker against him for all that I'm a useless card player, because he can't sugarcoat things. He can't put a PR veneer over what he feels. What he tells you about Kieran Junior's career thus far is what he thinks. And one of the things about Fallon when he was riding, Fallon Senior, is that he used to get categorized in the press as this almost, you know, his brute strength lifted the winner over the line. But be assured, listeners, there's an awful lot going on between his ears. And it's really interesting for us to have recourse to that these days. And I hope we'll have much more of it in the future as Kieran Junior's career progresses.
Well, here he is, reflecting on what was an amazing weekend. This is Kieran Fallon Sr., father and mentor to the July Cup hero. Kieran, you've had many great days in the saddle, a few great days out of it. Just rank this one for me.
Yeah, it has to be up there with, I think, Thunder Snow winning the World Cup, you know. I've never felt, you know, so overjoyed at that time when he did, and again on Saturday, you know, when Kieran won the July Cup, it was a feeling I never got when I was riding. I don't know why, you know, whether the derbies or arcs or whatever, you know, I just think that it was my job and I had to do them, you know, but this was different, a different feeling. I wish I could experience it when I was riding.
Well, you've experienced it now, but you left the race course and went home to watch on the TV. Was that because you wanted to stay in the background?
Well, I'm a little bit weird like that. I'm not a people's person, you know. I feel uncomfortable around people, even though there was no people at the races. But I like my own space when I want to be focused. It's like when I was riding a horse. As soon as I got on the horse's back, you know, I felt like I was in a different place altogether. And it's a way, because I can't. It's very hard to explain. But you know, when you want to dissect something in the way, like, this was a big deal, you know, it was a grade one for an apprentice that hasn't been around very long. You know, he never rode pony races or anything, you know. And I wanted to zoom in and I wanted to be on my own. So I only lived 2 minutes from the track, so it was handy, you know. So I felt comfortable when I was sitting at home, and it all worked out brilliant, you know.
Do you think he took on board everything you told him? How much do you think goes in when you're discussing races with him?
Well, I don't really discuss races at all with him, because trainers give you instructions. You leave the gate, it's up to yourself after that. You cannot tell. And that's one thing I used to love about Sir Michael Stott when I used to ride for him. And Aidan O'Brien, they never told me. They never told me what to do. We'd sit down and we'd say the derby before, day before or whatever. We'd have a glass of wine or whatever. This is with Sir Michael, not with Aidan. Obviously, we'd have a cup of tea with Aidan. But we'd just go to the race and, you know, see how it's going to unfold and, you know, and just talk about it, you know. But we'd never write any tying you down. Sir Henry Cecil, on the other hand, was a little bit different. He used to try and, you know, tie you down, you know, to a certain, you always just want to have handy, and he wanted you to get a lead, you know. And, you know, so it's all different, you know. So, but with him, you know, he has to learn himself, and he, you know, obviously been going to America and Australia, he's learned how the clock works, which is so important. So, I mean, he's doing everything okay at the moment, you know, he's getting there.
You and his mother, Julie, must be incredibly proud of him, not just because he's such a good rider, but because of the way he conducts himself. He seems to be incredibly mature.
Yeah, probably a lot of that wouldn't have anything to do with me, because I was barely around, you know, when he was growing up and most of his life, you know, because I was either here, there, or everywhere, which you are in racing, you know, 7 days a week, you know. Come the winter, you're abroad, whether it's Hong Kong, Japan, America, or whatever, you know. So it's up, I mean, it's all Julie, really, that how he is, where he is today, you know.
And I take the credit for the riding dog. I have to take the credit for that.
you've got to take the credit for plenty. And I was watching the two of you the other day on the July course, and you've obviously got a great understanding and a great bond, and this must give you an enormous amount of pleasure.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't just on Saturday. I for a while have been taking him up to that. While I always felt was the hardest track to ride was the Rolly Mile, and I, like I was saying before, that Fred Archie, in one of his books said he thought the same. It was a very difficult track to ride because of the contours, the undulations, running downhill at the most important time of all that, So I took him up there, and we'd sit and we'd watch the Guineas, we'd watch the most of the big races, and we'd sit down and watch, and just watch things unfold, and to see what he'd pick up on it, and I'd say, look at what you can't remember Ryan Moore particularly. I think it was in Glen Eagles in the Dewhurst when he kind of didn't get a great run. I'm nearly sure it was Glen Eagles, he didn't get a run. And luckily, he got out of trouble and he went on and won. But it was a perfect example of the trouble you can get into, riding certain tracks, But it is important, I think, to walk the track and, mentally have it in your head, what you want to do. And then, of course, things develop after that when you leave the gate.
Kieran, it was a joy to watch on Saturday. I think everyone's got a good feeling about it. And it was lovely to see you as well. Thanks so much for talking to me.
Thanks, Nick.
Well, it's not really surprising that the Trade Daily this morning is completely dominated with tributes to Barry Geraghty on the announcement of his retirement. Barry has been an extraordinary constant at the very top level in the jumps weighing room in the UK and Ireland now for 2.5 decades. He's had an amazing career, Dave.
Yes, he has. Do you remember the Britpop bands, Miley? I don't mean the Alan Partridge ones, but the real ones.
Yeah, I am old enough to remember Oasis and Blur.
Right, well, if we take Ruby Walsh as Blur and McCoy as Oasis, I'd like to throw in Barry Geraghty as Pulp, because while there was all that debate raging as to who was the better out of Oasis and Blur, and of course it's impossible to like both bands, as you can't like the Stones and the Beatles, even though they're both seminal groups of musicians. And I always thought of Geraghty as Pulp, because Pulp were actually my favourite band of that trio, that album Different Class. I still play from time to time. And there was a point, I'm thinking about the time of More of That's win in the Stayers Hurdle of 2014, I think it was, when Geraghty was every bit, I think, the equal of Walsh and McCoy. He seemed to bring together in one jockey the best characteristics of each of his rival jockeys, and in that sense he was a little bit underrated. But of course, it's no great surprise, I suppose, at 41 or nearly 41, he's 41 in September, that he should call time. He's won all the big races. He made his name with Moscow Flyer and then went on really successful spells with Nicky Henderson and then lastly with JP McManus. And yeah, I saw the word shock retirement yesterday. I don't think that a jump jockey in his early 40s, when he decides to call time, that would be described as a shock, but he'll certainly leaves big boots to fill. I'm interested to see who would replace Geraghty as JP McManus's jockey. I see that Aidan Coleman is the second favourite behind Mark Walsh, who's about 2-1 on in one book. If I were JP McManus, I'd be looking at Jonjo O'Neill Jr. I think he's a perfect fit for that job. And if I were Colin Tizard, I think I'd try and sign him up quick smart.
Well, this is what Nicky Henderson, Barry Geraghty's great friend and ally, had to say about the Geraghty retirement news. Well, Nicky, thanks for talking to me, and many apologies for interrupting your one holiday that you get in Scotland, but I know that there's one man you won't mind interrupting your holiday for, and that's a certain Barry Geraghty. How did you react to the news yesterday?
Well, obviously, there's bound to be a sort of tinge of sadness in the whole thing, because, it's been a
we've got a long association, a very happy one too. On the other hand, it's great that he has gone out on his own terms, you might say, in that he's in one piece, which is always good. And I know it's been, you know, we've talked, and I think it was just a pity the season had to finish, you know, obviously the season ended as it did, but you can actually say he did go out in a blaze of glory, although it wasn't actually intended to be that at the time. But no, one must look back at it as really happy times, and we had, you know, rather like with when he took over from Mick Fitz, I needed a bit of experience, and I had some good boys at the time with Nico and Jerry McGrath and various others who weren't quite ready for the big days, and that's where Barry was really good. I mean, he was good every day, but he was always a great man for the big occasion. He was just we were very, very good mates, and I say, yes, it's sad, but B, you know, I'm thrilled for him. I know that's what he wanted to do, and you know, he's got a lovely family, and he's got lots of other things he can go and enjoy and look back on a wonderful career.
What was it about him that made him such a good big race jockey?
I think he was cool, if that's the right word. Nothing fazed him, and I think he could. He was just very. He understood the sort of. Well, he took the pressures very well. If there were any, I don't know. There were really, and even at the end there. With winning the champion hurdle and the RSA with Champ and Epitant, you know, he was as cool as you could get, and some, certainly with Champ it didn't look like it, but you know what he's like. He got what he needed out of Champ, and that was one of the most remarkable races. And you know, to the end, he was strong, yes, but he was a good horseman, and you know, I just think it's great that he's sort of, you know, he's retired happy and satisfied that he's, and I think you look back on very proudly on a fantastic career.
Nicky, thanks so much for chatting to me. Best of luck, and lovely to hear your thoughts on Barry.
Not at all. Thank you, Nick.
Nicky Henderson there. I wondered if Barry Geraghty was pulped, does that make Henderson Jarvis Cocker, Dave?
Oh dear, now you throw me one. No, I've got in enough trouble with Nicky Henderson over the years. I'm going to let that one go through to the keeper, if you don't mind.
Not at all. Let's just have a tip for you for today, or whenever you like. I don't mind. You can go to the weekend if you prefer.
No, it is today. It's in the 6:45 at Kempton Park, and it's Vasari, a horse who's rated 87 as he runs in handicaps for the second time. He's related to a couple of horses who are significantly better than that. Ran off a mark of 78 at Newmarket last month. Didn't get the breaks, is now a pound lower, and crucially steps up to 7 furlongs. And I think that could be the key for the Sir Michael Stout trainee. So it's Vasari in the 6:45 at Kempton Park.
David, thank you very much for talking to me this morning. Thank you very much for listening as well. Don't forget, you can download Nick Luck Daily on iTunes, on Google, on Spotify, and on SoundCloud. And if you do enjoy our show, please can you rate, review, and subscribe. We will see you again tomorrow. Hope you have a very happy Monday. You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with FitzDares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary.